This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
For the last few weeks, grocery stores across America have been stocked with all sorts of candy to celebrate Valentine's Day. Of course, there are classic candy hearts, or maybe you've bought some gummy candy. But when it comes to Valentine's Day, does anything beat chocolate? As Willy Wonka would tell you, it's a big part of our culture, and it's got a rich history to back it up, too. That's where Catherine Sampeck comes in. She's a professor of anthropology at Illinois State University in Normal. Her work focuses on the cultural history of chocolate, specifically within Central America. She earned her bachelor's and master's degrees on this topic from the University of Chicago, and a couple years ago, she was awarded a British Academy Global Professorship. Right now, she's in the middle of 4 years learning more about chocolate, working with a team of researchers at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. On Wednesday this week, my Illinois Public Media colleague Christine Herman spoke with Catherine about what she's learned so far. This conversation is on tape, but you can always let us know what you think about our program by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Christine Herman takes it from there.
Katie, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much, Christine. I'm glad to be back.
So, Katie, when a lot of people think of chocolate, it's in terms of the candy bars you see at the supermarket checkout. But there's so many different things people have done with it through history all the way up till now. So, briefly, how has that evolved through the years?
Well, the way I think about it is that people have had a love affair with chocolate for thousands of years. And so, listeners may be aware that chocolate is made from the seed of a tree, a small tropical tree. And that tree was domesticated about 8,000 years ago, and looks like it probably was done in northern Amazonia, so northern Central America, in a tropical region. The tree itself, so this is a domesticated tree that grows amid other wild trees, undomesticated trees in this in a tropical forest. And the fruit grows year round, and it's a big sort of papaya almost looking fruit. And inside there are about 30 to 40 fat seeds. And those seeds inside that fruit are what we make chocolate from. And so the first evidence is about, like I said, around 7,000 years ago. The oldest archaeological evidence is in Ecuador from about 5,500 years ago in the Mayo Chinchipe region. And then from that kind of Amazonian heartland, it moves at some point into Mexico and Central America. And the people there adopt it very lovingly. And really, in some ways, it changes people's lives and the way where they build their homes, how they work, how they engage with the forest environments around them. And that is really getting going about 4,000 years ago. And so we see different kinds of ceramic vessels that people had, probably foods and drinks in those ceramic vessels to store it and to serve it. And then we also see it as a sacred offering. So we'll find archaeologists have found cacao seeds, these same seeds that we make chocolate out of, as in ceremonial settings, in these in burials and in other kinds of in temples and other sorts of really sacred contexts. So we know that it was quite revered and loved, but it was also a part of everyday life. Certainly by about 1200 BC, and then by 800 BC, it's really, really found throughout a lot of Central America and Mexico, and along the Pacific coast, and especially in tropical regions, but also in the highlands. People are trading this around really widely. And so it's moving out of just where it's grown and where it can be cultivated to people are passing this around and giving it as gifts and making it a part of many parts of their lives. Mm. And if we kind of fast forward from those early origins to about the 6th to the 8th century, so 500 AD to about 750 or so AD, we see, say, in the Maya area in Central America and Mexico, inscriptions and murals that really show this, not only the sacred use and the use of cacao-laden drinks and foods and special events, life-changing ceremonies like weddings, but also given as a kind of a tax, a tribute of people in a region to the Lord for that region. And so we see, we have inscriptions that we can read, and there are counts of these amounts of tax that people are paying. And so for one region, you might have 24,000 seeds, which comes out to about 44 pounds of just the cocoa seeds. And the other thing that we learn from these ancient inscriptions is the tremendous variety that people are consuming cacao as a food and a drink. And a lot of people think that this sort of sweetness and chocolate and cacao happened pretty recently, but I can tell you it's ancient. It's as ancient as these Maya inscriptions because they are talking about sweet cacao. So
absolutely.
There's
yeah.
this real blossoming, yeah, of using it in all sorts of ways and enjoying it in all sorts of ways and this tremendous variety and really that connection of money and wealth with cacao as well.
Yeah. The love affair with chocolate continues strong to this day. This is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. And for Valentine's Day, we're talking a bit about one of the holiday's sweetest treats, chocolate. We're joined by Catherine Sampeck, professor of anthropology at Illinois State University. Right now, she's working with a team of researchers at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. To learn more about the history of chocolate, she's a global professor of historical archaeology there. So I understand, Katie, one thing you've been able to do is essentially replicate how we've grown and used chocolate in the past. Take me through how that's looked in your work.
Well, this is a really exciting, very sort of hot off the presses new research that that we're doing here, because there is an international cocoa quarantine center here in Reading. So England's the perfect environment to quarantine cocoa plants and greenhouses because it can't possibly grow outside. So there are these trees that are producing fruit and you know, faring really, really well. So I've been able to assemble a team to reproduce the kinds of tools that people that I see in archaeological samples, but have never been tested on cutting that pod from the tree, opening the pod up, which has kind of a tough husk to it. So what that does is leave little breaks and chips and so forth in these tools of obsidian, which is a kind of volcanic glass, which was very common in these cacao growing regions as a kind of almost Swiss Army knife, all kinds of tools people would make from it. But no one's ever studied the exact sort of fracture and residue pattern you might get from cutting cacao and processing it specifically. So that very much is in process right now. We're doing those tests. We're working with materials that are the same source of volcanic glass in Central America as I find on archaeological sites in the cacao growing regions. So it's very exciting. And then also because of that ready access, constant access to fresh cacao fruit and seeds and so forth, mm-hmm. we're able to study very carefully the chemistry and how it changes with the processing and then look for those kinds of residues on the archaeological materials that we're studying from different time periods, from basically the beginning of the use of cacao in Central America to very much more recent times, to its adoption by throughout the world in the 16th century to even into the 19th century, and see how the recipes change and the uses change.
Can you talk about the role biodiversity plays in the story of chocolate? Because I understand there's cacao, but then there's also plenty of other ingredients, other plants and trees that go into making chocolate what it is.
Absolutely. So that's another line of research that's really opened up here at Reading, and working with the different partner institutions of Kew Gardens and the British Museum. And what I've really come to realize is that each of these special kind of luxurious drinks and foods that we have records for either in ancient texts and descriptions or from colonial ones in the 16th and 17th century, that just having the cacao was not enough as far as for eating and drinking, that people combined it into different sorts of amazing sounding recipes. And that made it really proper and the right thing to serve at different kinds of occasions. And if looking at those particular plants and identifying them, it's really revealed this tremendous array from small sort of almost garden flowers of Mexican marigold to trees that would grow in and around the cacao in the same kind of environment and kind of support that cacao growing environment, even vines and small shrubs. And one of those vines is vanilla, which you're probably familiar with, to trees, these tall kind of amazing looking trees with fantastic bright red flowers that look like a person's hand. And all of those have different flavors and different qualities to them that gave a very special character, a very special nose to each drink and each food.
So in the last minute we have on before we have to wrap up today, what do you hope people take away from the work that you're doing?
Oh, I hope that people take another look at their chocolate bar or their chocolate heart that they might get for their treat this holiday, and realize that something that seems like a simple treat has such a complex history to it, and in it and all of the different stages and different events that brought it to us today is something that we can learn from as far as not just how things might have tasted and looked in the past, but really crucial issues like sustainability, biodiversity, systems, ways to make that chocolate that are really fair and healthy for everybody.
Well, Katie, this has been fascinating, and we're going to have to leave it right there for today. Catherine Sampeck is professor of anthropology at Illinois State University and a global professor of historical archaeology at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Thanks so much for joining us on the 21st, and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was great to talk to you.
And that was my Illinois Public Media colleague, Christine Herman, in conversation with chocolate expert Catherine Sampeck. And that's it for us this week. Coming up Monday for President's Day, we'll bring you two conversations with authors who've looked at how the actions of past presidents still echo today, especially in how they dealt with the press. Before we go, please consider joining our texting group. It's a great way to share comments and questions on the show. You can join by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We appreciate hearing from you about our programs and your suggestions for future guests or stories. You can email those to us at talk@21stshow.org, and you can find that address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got our past shows there. You can find links to subscribe to our podcasts or just look us up on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. You can find that by searching for Illinois Public Media. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. Happy Valentine's Day. We'll talk with you again on Monday.